I hesitate to use the word trauma bonding, but like there is an element of that. Like we went through something really hard together that built us both. One of the greatest things about it was we were completely broke for years. We got on the Dave Ramsey thing to help clean up the rest of my mess. That helped us like structure. And again, it gave us a battle plan of like how we were going to pay off what debts I had remaining. And we had that struggle together. It was formative for us is what I will say, because then when you actually start, we started to make some money finally, and we were hell bent on like winning, right? And like getting back ahead in life. And that was our foundation. I see guys like quit well-paying jobs to pursue a dream and a career of something they think is going to be better for their family. Dude, my hat's off to you. I don't know what that's like, but having kids now and we make a little bit of a pivot in the company that, that I'm scared to do. Dude, I'm like, I can't imagine starting a company from scratch again. So nothing but respect out there for the folks that are going after it, pursuing the American dream. I truly respect that and admire that and think you should go for it if you think you should. Just do it in a smart way.
I wanted to start today just by saying thank you for listening. When we first started this show, we had one simple goal of professionalizing this industry. But more importantly, I wanted to give all of you a bit of your life back as entrepreneurs. And I never could have imagined we would have reached this many people. We've had our ups and downs, but man, have we learned so much about what actually brings value to this industry and how we could bring the change that so many of us are working towards. So my ask for you today is simple. It's to subscribe. It's the one free thing that you can do to help drive momentum in everything that we've been working on. So if you get value from this show and you believe in what we've set out to go do, I encourage you to subscribe and be a part of helping us reach this entire industry. Thank you.
You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less.
Caleb, thank you, my friend, for coming to the show. Stoked to talk to you today.
My pleasure, and I'm flattered, so thank you for having me.
All right. We got lots to get through. I really wanted to get into the personal side of your life today, if you're cool with it. And I'm just fascinated by you. I coin people like you as what I would call like an Uber entrepreneur. You're doing a bit of everything. You started Autumn Landscaping. You've got Hardscape Academy. You've got a marriage retreat you do. And somehow in all this, you still are the kid contractor and run an awesome podcast. Why and how did you figure out how to do all this over the last 17 years? And yeah, why are you still doing all this, my friend? How'd you take all this on?
Yeah, there's some sort of syndrome, I'm sure, involved. The first thing is there's no I about it, right? We have, first and foremost, my wife is very involved and probably a co-conspirator in this, and she is actually. And so there's a big element there, right? And then we have a great team that we've built over the years, and that takes time. And so I can't take credit solely ever, right? And then of course God too. That would be the first and foremost, I suppose. But yeah, man, it's one of those things. Like we may drive our team crazy sometimes, you know, and that's a dangerous thing. And that's something we have learned too, by the way. Before I go too deep into that, like we need to stay really focused, right? On we're trying to not diverge much more. Long story short,
I'm curious, like, and I've read about you and Brittany, and I'm curious to know, like, what is your guys's why together? Like, why is she so involved in this? Why are you so involved in this? What is it that both of you share about all these things that's keeping you guys going at this pace, this tempo?
That the why is very important, right? So on the contracting end, we have a landscape design build company based just southeast of Columbus, Ohio. That's our first and foremost business venture. We'll employ, I think, 8 or 9 people this year in the field. We have a designer full time who also does sales for us. And so again, it's a very collaborative effort. The why on that is we love that business. We love building. We love construction. We love designing, outdoor spaces, solving problems for clients. That's just like that why is pretty cool there. We just like building, and something too we've evolved into. Now it's at the point where we're working on growing the company much beyond ourselves. And so that's become a game. And so that's almost like a why in its own, of like proving ourselves we can do this and build a great company that people want to work at and make a lot of money working at. So that's a neat why for us. And then our other ventures, with the podcast and our training academy, and our Hardscape Construction Training Academy, that is, and the marriage conference and stuff. The why of that is, to break it down quickly, is to save others from going through the hardship I've put myself through in the hardest ways possible. And so they say the wise man learns from the fool's experience, so I'm told. And so we're trying to throw out what we can to folks to help them hopefully not have to learn the hard lessons the way I had to. If, you know, that really is like the why. It's, you know, sharing our struggles and failures and our wins. If that helps someone, that is an amazing bit of feedback, as you know, with what you do. Like getting that feedback of like, man, you helped me out of a bad spot, or you got me into a better spot. Like that is the, you talk about like the endorphins or whatever from that. Like that is an incredible payoff to hear that you actually helped someone in something that really matters. That's so cool. So that's the why.
That's good, man. No, I resonate with that. I think some of the hardest parts of what we go through in life often become the strongest things of what we want to give to others. It's like this like gift we want to give. And it's like, whether we get paid for it or not, we get a ton out of it, which sounds like you're very much in that vein.
A foundation is and should not be easy to dig, right? And so unfortunately mine has been through bedrock, or, you know, been through rocky ground. And that's all self-inflicted, by the way. I've learned the entrepreneurship journey the hard way, unfortunately. Some folks I feel like may come a little easier to, but I had to learn a lot of it the hard way, unfortunately, much to my own doing. I mean, really. So that's it, man. That's where it comes from.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about, there was a time earlier on in business that you were going through bankruptcy and Brittany was at your side. And I'm actually curious to know on the dynamic of the relationship, even like what that season was like for you guys, how you worked through it. And yeah, just paint that picture for us a little bit.
That was wild. So, and it's nothing fun to talk about, but what I find, like, who the hell wants to admit that? I wish I had that soundbite of the guy, the guy from The Office where he just screams, "I declare bankruptcy." It's not that easy. You just don't yell it out into the ether. To preface that, how did we end up here, right? Like, I started a lawn care business in 99, pre-internet, which is kind of wild to think. Some of the young folks out there, young contractors, there was a time without the internet. We built companies without internet, believe it or not. And so first few years were pretty good. And then this is on me for sure. I tried to build a company bigger than I was at the time. And so like, I wasn't good at delegating, hiring out the things like, you know, the accounting work that I didn't want to do, the tax work. I just worked in the field like an animal for years and years and years and ignored the important stuff, which is my own self, discipline, my own self, self-education. Like I was learning the craft, the trade, like crazy. Like I loved building, and so I really poured everything I had into that. And so, but I didn't pay attention to the business management aspect of it. And so I started to get myself into a hole with taxation. Like I wasn't you know, withholding tax properly for employee payroll, and that's something I shouldn't have been doing in the first place. I wasn't there. And so I just dug this enormous hole, and that really came to a head in about 2008 2009, as much as I wish I could blame the economics at the time of like a crashing economy. I was so broke, it didn't affect my company at all. Like we were already just in bad shape. And so as part of a broader tax strategy, I wasn't in a lot of debt really, which I wish I would have been, because I would have had better equipment, right? Other than do it. Dude, I have done business so wrong, and I did business so wrong for so long. We could just go forever, and I'll let you dig deeper as you wish. But to get to the bankruptcy point, it was part of a broader tax strategy of like, hey, look, this guy's actually, he's serious broke on paper. Mm. We've been bankrupt the whole bit. And that helped us negotiate out of some tax situations, not all of them. Some of them are unforgivable, which is crazy. So my lesson here is like, dude, if you're going down a road of like you're behind in taxes and all this kind of stuff, state, local, federal, whatever, like you are not going to outrun them. You aren't going to hide from them. They will find you eventually, and they come sending some really scary letters. And the reason I say this stuff is because I have people reach out to me like, man, I'm kind of getting down that road. And dude, just face it now, get some good representation and face it, because it only gets worse. So bankruptcy in 08, my wife and I, a girlfriend at the time, you know, oh gosh, it's such a journey. I don't know. I don't know what was wrong with her intellectually or mentally to tie herself to my sinking ship.
But, she loves you, man.
We were down, man. It was cool. And I took her to a fancy steak and shake dinner one night that I couldn't even pay for to tell her, like, hey, look, because we've been dating a little bit. And I was like, hey, look, I'm completely broke. And she had an inkling, right? Like, she knew things were probably rough. And but we were still dating at the time. Like, look, I'm going bankrupt in August. And like, I'm completely broke. I'm going to come out of this with nothing. If you want to split, like, dude, no harm, no foul. I might respect you a little more, actually, if you did. And so here's your permission to flee, and rightly so if you do. And she didn't, again, by the grace of God for me. And so we rode that out, started a new company with all the proper advice and counsel to do that. And then that was a transition from there. And the awesome thing about that is we went through that completely broke together. So we understood what it was like to, I mean, I literally came out of bankruptcy with like $20 to my name. And my wife's smoking hot. And I'll never forget this. I'll tell this story and I'll let you go here. But like, we're going up the hill in this beat. Can I swear in here?
Yeah, we'll beep you, but it's fine. You can say
that's fine. In this truck. And I got my smoking hot fiance now at the time, and we're climbing it, lumbering up this hill, and I'm like, I will never be in this position ever again in my life. And like, she doesn't deserve that. I don't deserve that. My team doesn't deserve this. Like, we're gonna do something different. It took a while to figure out what that different was, but she's been my rock the whole time, and thank God. So there you go. Long answer to a short question.
So I want to get into this a little bit, because there's probably people listening right now that run a business with their spouse. Maybe things aren't going well financially, or maybe they are, but they just have no time, and there's problems, and the business is the center of it. Why do you think she stayed with you? Why did you stay with her? Why did that work? Why did, like, you say, thank God she stayed with me, but like, why do you think that is? What is it about your relationship, the dynamic, the way you guys talked? What happened in there? Because that doesn't always happen, right?
Right.
Well, logic would tell you you should be together right now.
Yeah. And her nature and you got the rest of the afternoon here. We're both hard-headed, right? We don't give up on things easily. And I think her and I, it's a long story, but her and I had a lot of history together. We'd known each other forever. And it's one of those things you just kind of happen into a circumstance with someone. You're like, wow, I didn't see this coming. And so her and I had been friends for a long time and dated other people and all this stuff. And then we kind of end up on this track back together. And And I don't know, man. We just enjoyed each other's company. And I think we found something that we could rally around and unify ourselves on and against and for. And I think that was it. It was just our nature to like, we're going to figure this thing out. And we just happened to like and love each other then. And it became our battle cry, I guess. And I don't, it's to some element that might not be healthy. I don't know, but that's where we ended up.
So similar to you, I've been with my wife since I was 16, and we have also been through all kinds of crazy stuff, right? From the death of my mom to moving to different states and provinces, I guess, to having kids and all the things that come with it. Really running a business. I found anyways with my wife, and similar to you, it started with a choice that we both made, right? It's just like, no, I choose you. Like so you did this before you guys even got married, but there was some sort of subconscious choice.
Which I do not recommend, by the way.
It starts with a choice, right? And it has to be both ways. It can't just be like, I want you to choose me too, but it's like, starts with that choice. And then when that happens, you go through stuff that would break up a lot of couples and you get through it. And then the next time it happens, you're stronger because of it. And when I look at, how am I, 39 now? I've been with my wife for 23 years, I think, since we started dating, probably similar to you, like same timeline. And I look at our life together and I'm like, you know what makes us so compatible is not necessarily that we're super compatible. We're actually really different. Like, we're into way different stuff. Mm. It's the fact that we've been through all this together, and like, we've been through war. And now I know what it's like to go through a battle with you. And now I know what it's like to come out of it with you. And I love you for it. Is that kind of what you guys experienced through that phase? Or you tell me.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to, and a great way to put it. I hesitate to use the word trauma bonding, but like there is an element of that. Like we went through something really hard together that built us both. And it was one of the greatest things about it was we were completely broke for years. We got on the Dave Ramsey thing to help clean up the rest of my mess. That helped us like structure. And again, it gave us a battle plan of like how we were going to pay off what debts I had remaining and just get back to getting ahead. And so we had that struggle together, and man, that is really formative. It was formative for us is what I will say, because then when you actually we started to make some money finally, and we used to go, like we would splurge to go out to eat and split a Chipotle burrito, her and I, and get water to drink. Like that was our splurging. I mean, we were hell bent on like winning, right? And like getting back ahead in life. And you're right. I mean, it was our foundation.
I find those moments, they're like the hardest parts of life. You're like, why is this happening to me? But then years back, you look back and you're like, no, that's what makes us so strong today. Like that is why we're still together. That is what's gotten us through all the other things. Without it, we wouldn't have substance.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree with that. And I think about that a lot of if that hadn't happened to us, I think we would be very average in our way we look at finances, the very average in like how we, and it's not to say that's even a bad thing otherwise, if you were just smarter than me and didn't wreck your life in your 20s, like financially. So let me back that up a little bit, because I have friends that were like smart with their money since they were in high school and they're very well off now. And it's like, man, sucks. I had to be so dumb. You know? It's like, and they're still well put together people and smart. And I'm like, man, I had to like learn all that the hard way for some reason. But, that was in my nature to do that. But yeah, man, I'm psyched on you for that with your wife. That's fantastic.
It's, you know what? So I'm in a men's group, a Christian men's group, actually. And we talk about our lives and our wives and our kids and all that kind of stuff. And I find some of them really struggle to like communicate at a deep level at this stage in their marriage. Like they've been together, you know, they're all in their 40s and they're struggling to have depth. And I mean, maybe you found this is, I find like, no, it's just cause like, it's cause we went through trauma together that we have this depth. And some of them, a lot of them are pastors actually. So a lot of them grew up in the church and they had a pretty regular life. And now they're going through hard times because kids and like, you know, you get it. Like when you get into 40, things just life hits you with a bat. And it's the hard stuff we went through early on that you might say, hey, I don't know why I went through this. I wish we didn't. I challenge you. And I think, hopefully you see this, but it's like, I think that's the stuff that makes your relationship so strong today. Without it, I don't think you would have that.
Yeah, it definitely is foundational. And then when you're in business together, you're just getting kicked in the shins all day long anyhow, be it in little ways and then sometimes right between the legs possibly. But like that continues to like, and again, that is our bonding, I think, of like, we're going to win this thing and figure it out, you know? And so for us, that is a huge part of us. It's, you know, it still is tough because then when you are together, like that's something we've learned to have to work on is like every time we are together, we're talking work and so, or work or kids. And so then it's almost become an exercise where we need to make sure that we're actually talking about things outside of that, right? To continue to grow in multi ways.
Can we get into that? Actually, I want to talk a bit about the division of how you guys work in the business, how you guys work at home, how you keep those boundaries. Cause I think that is another big thing, especially when you operate with your spouse that is incessant. How do you actually even just divide your strengths today? Like how did you define who does what and who's good at what? And in the business specifically, how'd you come to that?
We did okay with it for the first probably 10 years, give or take. And then we started to grow the company beyond ourselves. And then it became hard because for the longest times, our roles were very, very blurred or, you know, merged, right? Or even, you know, parallel to each other. And as the company's grown to, you know, we'll have, I think, 8 or 9 people in the field this year. Like there is now that has been a thing where it's like, I need to have a role, right, of like operations, some sales, and then mostly like fostering client relationships to bring in new work. And she is in more of like marketing and setting up systems and things like that. But while we were trying to figure that out, to where we realized like, wow, this it's getting to a point now we have to diverge our roles. Mm-hmm. It was very tough, frankly, because again, we're very passionate about the company and where we both have a vision that the endpoint's the same. The paths are parallel sometimes. Sometimes they stray. Sometimes they mingle together. And when it came to like figuring out the roles of the company, there, I don't want to say there was a power struggle, but there was, it was challenging for us. I'll be very, very open. It was challenging for us for a while. And we're still navigating that to some extent of like, I'm relinquishing some things that I don't want to, frankly, but if I'm going to be, if I'm serious about where I want to go with this thing, I have to. I just can't handle every bit of art direction for what I foresee the company's image being. And like, I've got to let go of some stuff, and it's very hard for me, frankly. There's other stuff I want to let go of. It's easy to let go. So, you know.
What is some of that stuff? What is some of the stuff that she's great at that you're just like, I don't want to let go of this, but you've had to?
There's things I want to think that I'm good at that I'm really not, and I have to
tell me about like, it.
Come to terms with that. Brittany is really good with setting up organizational systems and pathways for flow and function. And so that's really good with, she's really great with that. And again, just goofy stuff like technical things and issues that arise, or like figuring out why some payroll issue isn't right. She's just great with that stuff. I don't have patience for that. I'm not good at that. That kind of stuff is easy for me to be like, yeah, go you, you know, that's great. I'm glad you're doing it. But like when it comes to like, hey, these are the new, here's the thing right this moment. I know I'm struggling with releasing. It's like, we're big on marketing and branding, and like our name is all over all the time, our logo, our brand, right? And like we got to put in a new order of yard signs, and like I want my hand in that because I have a very specific vision of what I think we should look like. And Britt doesn't look at that the way I do, and is not as critical as I am about that. And so there is struggle there because I need to just let her do it and execute on it and let it, whatever comes back, just be like it. But it happens if she does it, everything on my desk just piles up. And I got to realize, like, if I'm actually serious about where I want to go, I've got to just let it go and let her, she will execute and get it done. It'll sit on my desk and wait on review for too long.
Could you even like, give me a specific example where it's like, you guys both disagreed on a key decision and how you came to a resolution and like maybe even some learning that came out of it?
Oh boy. There's like a million of those, and I'm just trying to find like a good example of that. I think this sounds petty, but her just even taking title of CEO was a weird thing for me to let go, frankly, as a man, as a guy that founded the company. Well, my first, actually, technically, I don't own the company now. Like, you know, coming out of bankruptcy, she started it. She was a sole owner, active owner. But obviously there's been the thing of like, we both our owners, right? We both, you know, own it in some way, right? But just not on paper. That's okay. We are definitely not squabbling over that. That's the joke used to be back in the day when she started a new company as we were coming out of bankruptcy and all that, the thing people used to be like, well, what happens if you two break up? And I'm like, I don't care. We're going to argue over who has to take this stupid thing. It's not going to be who gets it. It's going to be who has to take it and clean it up or sell it, get rid of it. So that was always a joke. Now, there's a little more on the line, but it's that was an interesting thing of how we worked through that. And a huge part of it, if not all of it, was me having to find humility in myself, right? To accept like, Caleb, is this like, what are you really upset about here? Like, why are you struggling with this? And not, you know, your title is operations manager or, you know, whatever. Like, but if I'm being open, which I am now, like, that was a struggle for me to not have title of founder CEO. Like, that was just a thing. And we're a tiny company, whatever, but that was like, that was weird for me. And always, I would tell you all on it, frankly, any of the problems we have in the company generally are me being hard-headed to change. Right. Usually she comes up with some pretty decent idea and I'm just so daggone hard-headed to change. And I'm better than I used to be, believe it or not. Like, oh gosh. So it's challenging, man. But always it's looking in the mirror, right? If there's a problem, first you look in the mirror, right? You can look out the book. Good to Great, yep. You know, that classic, right? The mirror or the window, which one are you going to look at? And it's always the mirror, right? What is the problem? I can look outside and blame you. I've got to look with blame somewhere, right? So am I going to look out the window for somebody to blame or something, or am I going to look in the mirror? And man, you will find 100% of your problems are you in some way that you're just, even if it's things beyond your control, how you react to those is huge. Is it? No, it's not even huge. It is it. How you react to anything is on you.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that you are not a product of the things that happen to you in life, but you are a product of the decisions you make thereafter. And slowly over time, that defines who you are as a person, as a soul, as an individual.
And there's an element of that, of like, there has to be, I feel like you can operate in ignorance of that for a long time, even against your own will or understanding of like, I have sympathy for like, I just didn't know or realize how much power I actually had over my own life, which may sound ignorant, but it's like, I do have control over how competent I am and how, you know, strong-willed I might be on something for the better or for the worse. And like, I think I was ignorant to that in a lot of ways for a long time. And like, there's a part of that I needed at least to be awakened to of like, no, this is like, yeah, I didn't grow up rich or anything, but like, I also could decide to like, I'm going to stop doing some poor person stuff. I didn't realize like, there's just a weird thing of like, you don't feel like there's a way out of things sometimes when like, man, really there is, but you've got to awaken that spirit inside of you to realize like, dude, I can figure some way out of this. I don't have to continue doing the same stupid stuff.
You stop playing victim and you start looking at kind of how can I actually start to direct this in a more positive direction than just the victim mentality.
Yeah, it's, yeah, yeah.
I want to go back to something you spoke to, because this is beyond just running a business with a spouse. This is running a business with a business partner of any sort. The decision to have your business partner go into the CEO role and for you to report down to them. I know that I have two business partners, including me and myself. And I know that position and the time it takes and the importance that it makes for the entire organization. Any advice for those who are just dealing with that right now and they're trying to figure out what side I should sit on? And I know the feeling, exactly what you said, it's ego. It's like, I should be in charge of this. But then there's a reflection, which is, no, what am I great at? What am I amazing at? Okay, I should put myself in that spot and be super excited, right? What's the question on this? What did you learn from doing that? What's a message for those who are going through that right now that would just help them?
Again, self-realization is like probably one of the first things I would tell anybody to work on in their lives. Like understanding yourself and your personality and your traits will, this is something I wish, man, I'd have explored way younger, a long, long time ago. And I still have so far to go on this, but a huge element of that is like understanding yourself and then asking questions yourself, even of like, well, why am I feeling this way? And getting honest with yourself. At the end of the day, it's just like, is it jealousy? Is it I am again not being humble and willing to submit to, you know, to someone else? And then like, okay, well, if my goals are X, it is going to take some humility, if not a ton, depending on the person, of like, I have to submit or humble myself in some way to achieve the goals I have set for myself. And it might be like letting someone else that's better at something, which is again, a whole nother layer of humility of realizing and just accepting the fact of like, yeah, I suck at that. I really need to accept that and let someone else that's a powerhouse take care of it or run that role or whatever. And then I'll work on that in the meantime, and maybe I elevate to it in another time. But I think the short of it is just self-realization and humility.
Yeah, it's like a very objective view of the situation. You know what's helped me in this, actually, is not looking at the business as what do I need or want or what can I do or not do, I just look at the business as, what does it need as its own entity? If it's a child almost, right? What does this thing need to be raised well? And if all I cared about was its success, then what decisions would I actually make? Let's pretend I'm not even running this business and I'm just looking at it from afar. You know, you talk to tons of business owners. So you probably have the chance, like I do, to just talk to individuals and see their stories and what's going on. And it's probably so easy for you to like look in and say, hey, why don't you try this? And they're just like, ah. Oh. And it's so obvious to you because you're objective in the view, right? You have no emotional tie-in. But it's the ability to do that for your own business that's often the hardest, but most important element because it's your company. And the only way I've ever been able to do it is I don't think about myself. I don't think about my partners. Sometimes I don't even think about my team and as individuals anyways. I just look at the whole thing and I'm like, what does this little entity need? And if it needs sustenance, if it needs training, if it needs to grow up, what does it actually need? And then I'll come back once I've thought through that, what part I can do for that. I'm just one element. I'm just one piece of skill. I'm not the whole thing. And I detach myself from it a bit.
It's humility again, right? It's saying part of me must die for something else to live or thrive, and be it, okay, I need to, if I'm serious about like my objectives, again, what are my goals? And for this entity or in the company or my family, like, okay, maybe I don't get to hunt Saturn and I work overtime instead. Like whatever it is, right? You're part of you may have to die for the goals and things you've set for, or what you say you want, which one of my favorite sayings is, especially since the spouse thing's involved, was a good woman holds a man accountable to what he says he wants.
Right.
And so I'll get, you know, upset with Brittany, my wife, at times of like, have you done this? Did you do that? And it's like, micromanage me. You know, and it's like, well, pull back a little bit. If I know her spirit is correct, her nature is right, and her intention, which is what we always have. This is something we're learning through. We do marriage. I do all sorts of coaching. And that's one thing, if I could tell folks that I wish I'd have done way earlier in my career, breakthrough, like whatever, like coaching, the sooner you sign up and you buy time, you buy experience through, again, things like breakthrough. We have a marriage coach that helps us navigate these things. But what we have to learn is like, if we have to believe this, but like understand that our spouse and even our partners in business, whatever, and our coworkers, like we have to get and have people around us that we believe want the best for us and the organization. And so the, like, if they're getting on us about something of like, well, they're actually helping me get to what I said I wanted. Right. And so there's a part of that you have to submit to and humble yourself to realize like, well, wait, I said I wanted this. Does this help me get there or not? And of course, there's all sorts of toxic ways that can be done, but that's a whole nother discussion of like healthy relationships. But that for me, gosh, dude, I've tangent so far from wherever we were. I don't even know where I was going with that now, but it's like just a huge part of it is, again, just, I'm going to say this like 100 times because this was impactful for me. This may not be someone else listening's issue, but like, maybe I'm sounding like I just had these insane like ego issues, which I didn't, but like to go beyond where I was, there was little things in me I have got to work on, and it's releasing things in the company as we grow and we'll be developing more managers and more foremen. I've got to be listening to them, right? Of like what they want in the field and what they want as perks in a company, things like that. So I just got to learn to shut up and listen. It's a big one.
Hey, Caleb, I'll give you some credit here, man. Like you're coming at it from a very many place. Like, oh man, I got to just let go and be, this was hard and this sucks. It's like, no, dude, great leaders get out of the way so that their people can go be the best versions of themselves as well. And I think deep down, you know that. I think maybe it's hard to feel it sometimes, right? Because there's an emotional component to the whole thing. But if you objectively look at the situation, what did Caleb do? Him and Brittany pulled themselves out of bankruptcy. They ground like super hard for many years. They got the business to a place where it required more than just what Caleb could bring. Caleb then stepped back graciously and allowed his wife to go and take on and be in her strength.
Easy on the graciously part, but yeah.
begrudgingly. And allowed Brittany to be in her element while you are in yours. right? And the only reason I frame it that way is because I have also been through this and I do get it. And then what you're saying is not something that just some people go through. I think all businesses that scale go through this. And then sometimes it's not a spouse. Sometimes it's a business partner. Sometimes it's somebody on their people on their team that they just need to allow them to take on more ownership and leadership, but they're in the way. And it's a critical part of growth that I think a lot of us as entrepreneurs struggle with because I'll call it ego. Our egos get in the way. And ego, I think, is the right word for it. And it's something, like I said, I've been through it, you're going through it, and I don't think it's uncommon. So yeah, I would see this as a great opportunity for people just to hear this, to learn and listen. Look, you're not alone. And Kayla's been through this, I've been through this. And it's a part of a well-oiled machine. It means you're doing something right as an entrepreneur. It's still
hard.
Can
I touch on that? The you're not alone thing, that's another part of our why. So many people think they're alone in all of this. Like they're the only ones that have made a bad decision or struggling with, again, the ego thing. And this is at every level. What I'm learning now that I didn't realize, which is why it wouldn't be a good, you know, like high level CEO at the moment yet, because I'm working on getting there. I didn't understand all these different mindsets and mind shifts that I needed to do. So like starting out low level, like turning over your first crew to a new to a foreman, right? That is that must be an ego shift or a humbling, right? If you have trouble with that, wait till you get to where you have managers, then you're turning loose, or a salesperson that represents your company, or you go higher up now, you're like, oh, you might step aside in like director of whatever, or again, CEO. And what you realize is like, you have to be shedding those skill sets to develop, you know, higher mindset, higher level mindset. And that's been like my big thing of growth now of what I'm realizing, like, man, it's just crazy. Again, like, when you realize how little you know, it's like scary. and that's just me thinking at this point how little I know. Next year I'll be like, wow, I really didn't know anything still. And you know what I mean? It's just wild how that onion just keeps unraveling. And that's it, man. It's at so many levels. And you go up into Fortune 500 companies. I mean, there are reasons, and this is something I didn't even know was a thing, but like, there's reasons people top out even at certain levels of CEO and, you know, or any director of anything. Like that's all the higher their skill set will go. One of my mentors, you know, Mark Bradley said, like, your company is a direct reflection of your own leadership skills. And that is going to be the company is going to top out at whatever capacity you have. So if you can't seem to break beyond, like, you know, a crew or two crews or 10. I mean, I've got a friend that's stalled out at 20 million. He can't break this 20 million mark. He's got another layer of learning. And like, dude, that's a thing. Like you stall at 20 million. That's, you can't.
For sure.
But dude, there's different mindsets and different things you have to release at those levels. It's wild, dude.
At that stage too, it is even more about bringing in talent and people that have been on that journey from say 20 to 50 million, right? It's an executive team. And it's that experience that most entrepreneurs require. And I do think there is a big difference between an entrepreneur and a business owner. They have very different strengths and or a businessman, I should say. They have very different strengths and they have very different things to bring to the organization. And it's important to acknowledge that, especially as the company grows, because a million, even 5 million, it's like the entrepreneur is pretty heavy in there, still making all the stuff turn every single day. But as you go to 5 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 on, it's a lot more about the management of the organization, which the entrepreneur actually needs to step out of the way and put good people in place to do their job.
Dude, we stalled out at 700,000 for a few years and we're like, and then we had some mindset shifts and it's like, okay, cool, 1.1 and then 2 and we're looking at 3 for next year. So it's like, it's just wild, man. And it's just like, gosh, will it ever end? And nope. Just all these little things you learn, like they were holding you back and it's like, oh Lord. So, and it doesn't end, man. So buckle up.
I can tell you with a surety, I've been on this journey. I'm not all the way down it anyway, but I am down it and it doesn't end. it gets more wild.
And that's the thing. That's why you got to love it, man. That's why you got to love it. And you've got to love that whole thing because, and that's for us, that's where it's gamified for us now is we're going to 3 million in revenue, which isn't a lot, but at the same time, it ain't nothing. And so like, but there's new levels of leadership we're having to unlock here. It's like, oh wow, this is a thing. And systems now are the more important than we've ever had. And that's, It's crazy, man. And if we didn't love that, it would be just terrible, right? And so it's not that it's easy. It's still terrible in its own way sometimes, but like, fortunately, it's a terrible, it's a cross we're willing to bear, right?
It's the greatest education you're ever going to receive.
Oh, sheesh, dude. Yeah.
Let's bring it back to you and Brittany a bit. I did have some topics I wanted to get into, and one was just on something I see a lot in marriage-run companies where the spouses are together, is there's a bunch of stuff that happens in the business that also gets taken home. And I know you've taken marriage counseling on this, like you said. Like, what are some of those things that have come up, and what have you learned, actually, like tools or mechanisms or ways to just make sure that what happens at the business doesn't happen at home or doesn't bring itself home?
Yeah, it's really hard, and to not take work stuff home. And we still do. We really try to cut it out, you know, a lot of heavy work conversations from 6 o'clock to 8 or 9. But man, when you're in the trenches, as my friend Paul says, like it is tough to avoid. But what one of the big things is like, hey, did you do this or that today? Me asking her or her asking me. And it, you know, it might be asked in a way it's like accusatory or, you know, hey, should have got this done today. What were you doing? Were you screwing around? You know, kind of you feel that. I'm bad about that. I'm like
aggressive.
Any
or
criticism of my accomplishments for the day directly. I'm just being so open here. Any criticism of what I got done that day, I see as like, you didn't work hard enough. And dude, I'll be damned if I didn't work hard enough. Like if there's anything I do, that's too much, right? But it's like, hey, I know you didn't mean it this way, but the way I heard that statement was this way. And she even knows when I start, and she knows, again, through coaching, my gosh, we already know each other's like triggers. And it's like, if I even start down that road or vice versa, I'm like, hey, I know you said it this way and I know you didn't mean it that way, but I cannot help in my reptile brain but to hear it as an insult or a passive, you know, insult or passive aggressive insult. And so like, I'm going to have processed through that. So bear with me a second here. But stuff like that, dude, just disarming the situation, calling it out, has been so big for us, because otherwise I would let that fester and we would get into situations. Dude, we wouldn't talk to each other for 2 weeks because one person's so strong-willed and the other's just as much. And like, oh, we'd talk, but it was factual only, you know? And we get into some spots that were just rough and sucked. And like someone, again, had to spur some humility about them and like, all right, look, I give up. I wave the flag. I can't live like this anymore. But like we would have some spells that were just terrible. And it's no way to live. And the whole time I know, like, dude, if she was in a car crash tonight, I would hate myself and I would have a hard time not, you know what I mean? Like crazy stuff. And it's just like, dude, and what that is maturity and a lack of immaturity rather, and a lack of humility. Right. And I have got to, and on both parties, by the way, not just me, but like, and we work through that, man. And it's like, dude, I'm 43 years old. You think I would know better? But it's like, no, apparently not. That's what I'm working through. So
you had mentioned communication. I think there's something to be said, not about what you communicate, but how you communicate it, right? Like,
oh, sure.
Something I learned years ago, just like, have you ever taken a course in, I took a course in conflict resolution years ago. Have you ever taken that? Or did your marriage counselor take you through some of the fundamentals of that?
Yeah, so we're working. Yeah, so I've read some articles about that, if you will. And then I kind of follow some stuff on Instagram, but do elaborate.
The simple phrase that I remember out of all, because it was like a full day, I think it was 3 days actually, we went through and we learned about our behaviors and our natural, you know, who we are. Some of us are aggressive, some of us are passive. A lot of us are passive aggressive in Canada, right? There's like these ways of being. But what you learn out of it is how to be assertive. And a lot of people use that word and think it's similar to aggressive, but it's quite different. And it's the ability to objectively look at yourself and the other person and see truth. And we've talked a lot about objective, looking at things objectively. And out of all of that, if there's like one sentence or saying that stayed with me, is like, Danny, this is what I tell myself, seek first to understand, then seek to be understood. And I have to bring myself to that simple thing, because it is easy when you want to go and just tell your partner, hey, you screwed this up. Hey, guess what? I need to let you know about this. And it's like, you're just, like you said, lighting a fire. Like you're not solving the issue. You're just feeling like I've said it. It's like, no, that's not going to work. So I need to seek first to understand, hey, what happened over here? What how are you? What's going on? And like, understand the situation, hear them out, even repeat back what they've said to me so they feel heard. Then and only then can I actually ask permission. Is it okay if I give you my thoughts on this? Right. And then can I express myself in a hopefully not a super accusatory way, right? It's like focus on the situation versus the individual. And it's just a simple statement. It's like, Danny, seek first to understand, then seek to be understood. And I, you know, in marriage and business and leadership, it's like the one thing that when I do it well, I feel like we actually get somewhere. We find common ground, if nothing else. And if I do it wrong, which I do a lot of, I just create more fires.
Well, and that's awesome stuff. And it really is like the whole don't attribute to malice what can easily be attributed to just ignorance, right? And so it's like, or lack of knowing. And so like, Britt and I joke, we read How to Win Friends and Influence together, that book together. She'd read it at night, because that's kind of things we do apparently. And so she'd read it out loud, and I'd lay there and we'd get through that book, and we read a ton of books together like that. But one of the things we learned was like, again, instead of like, hey, you know, did you get this done today? Whatever. But if you lead off with like, hey, I know you had like 80 things going today. By chance, did you get to X? Right. And that helps diffuse that a little bit for both parties, by the way. And when we started doing that to each other, we would also kind of laugh at each other, be like, hey, don't you How to Win in Friends and Influence Me.
I know your strategies. Each other on
it, right? But it worked. It was like, it like you said, it put out so many fires ahead of her, embers, or even a little flicker of a dangerous flame way before it needed to turn into something else. And there's a lot. I mean, this is just like a path we have been on like crazy for the last 2 or 3 years. Like, we have done a tremendous amount of like personal development, which is enormous. That was the word I was looking for earlier. Like, dude, you have got to pump, stop reading like install books and how to build whatever you're already freaking good at. Dude, start doubling down on your personal development. That is what will take you to levels that like you, if, depending on whatever goals you've set, like personal development's like the number one thing, in my opinion. If I could go backwards, instead of being so technician oriented, I would have done more personal development. And who knows, but that's my trajectory. That's where I'm at.
I think it's an evolution. Like, I watch our members go through our program, and they need to know their numbers first. They really need to understand the fundamentals of how not to go bankrupt finances along the way, right? And stay afloat, right? All those things that you learned early on, right? And that was a big lesson for you. Then they need to learn how to set up systems and how to set up people in those systems and make sure that the company has a process that it can follow. And it's very technical, and there's a lot of work that goes into that, which is what you guys have just been building. And then as you do that, you put leaders in place and other people in place that start to operate those systems. And what you're talking about becomes massively important, because it is all about your personal development and your leadership of others that allows all of that stuff to flow, right? And not to say that personal development isn't valuable early on. I mean, your ability to handle stress, all this stuff comes along the way. I do think it's also just a natural stage in business. And you're there right now where it's like, this will make or break the organization. But probably not as important when you were running a $300,000 company to know how to lead and develop and talk to people. You just probably need to know how to book work and make sure you made money on the job.
And, you know, I wrestle with that a lot. And I think it depends on, you know, if you're at a $250,000 or $500,000 and say you want to triple, you know, or you have a really aggressive growth plan, like that's where the personal development thing is a must, right? If you're like I was just kind of, well, as the work comes in, we'll do it. And like, it wasn't so much, or, you know, we're just hunting work and trying to stay alive. That's another dangerous place to be. Like, that's where that stuff, you know, the personal development and even paying attention to your numbers begins to take a back seat, just trying to stay alive. It's just, again, a huge thing about, I think, why like goal setting is so important, and just writing out your future of like, it doesn't matter if you're at a $250,000 and I want to be at a $250,000 5 years from now. Cool. Now we have a target at least. And now we have a trajectory that we all are on the same page with. But if it's something more aggressive, man, it takes a lot to get there.
You have to think different. You have to fundamentally think different, because if you just keep thinking the same way, you're just going to keep getting the same stuff.
Yeah.
It actually gaps you. When you start to see like, oh, to do that, we have to hire this many people, and I have to have these people lead it, and I have to have, you know, all these things in place, you suddenly realize like, I can't play the same role I've been playing. And a lot of us will just try and grow while still playing the exact same role. And that's what you're
talking. And again, why is that? Because we don't want to let go. And why is that? You start just digging. Yeah, you're gripping the table. Yeah, with a death grip. And it's, I don't want to let go. Well, why is that? And you ask that question yourself 5 times or 20, maybe. Like, you'll start getting to what the why is and the reason, and you just start unpacking that. And that takes time sometimes to work yourself through those routines. But yeah, man, that's where it's at.
And I think we all go through it, which is a big part of this. This is not just like
you. Nobody's alone.
No, nobody's alone. One more question, and then we'll move into the end of this. I wanted to ask you this because I have 3 kids at home. I know you have 3 kids at home. Running this business has shaped me massively and has shaped you obviously as well. And it's interesting for me and probably for you. My kids are growing up differently than I grew up, right? I grew up, and I think you might have too, but I grew up where I had to go build everything myself. I had to go build my own reality and I had to survive. How do you raise kids? I'm just curious your opinion on this. How do you raise your kids in the environment that you have today, you've built for yourself, and still bring that hunger in them and still breed that zest that you have? What's your take on this? Because I'm searching. So
I'm just
curious your opinion.
I struggle with this a ton. And I grew up well fed, but not a lot extra of that, right? Yeah. And my sons, each of them have a dirt bike. They're 7 and 9. They have another KO. They're like little Chinese ones, but they're still, you know. Yep. I bought a four-wheeler toy, just Polaris four-wheeler or whatever, when I was 38 years old. That was my first toy.
Yeah.
Again, A, out of financial mismanagement, why I got forced into that in my life. So I'll yield that there. And then so it's like, the thing is like dude, I struggle with this so hard.
Mm-hmm.
We travel a bit now. Like, the kids are growing up in ways that you know, by the way, is normal for some folks that they grew up, you know, not that we're well off or anything like that, but like, again, like, the Lord's been good to us. And we also, like, again, the Dave Ramsey thing was huge during our recovery years from bankruptcy, which, again, personal debt is one thing. We really try to stay out of that, other than house and maybe a vehicle if we need to. But the company, if it makes money, and it makes more than the interest rate on profit and overhead recovery, I'll finance it all day long. I don't care. That doesn't bother me at all. I sleep just fine. I know some guys that cannot sleep a wink if they know they owe somebody a nickel. Like, and that's okay. For me, I don't sweat it. Doesn't bother me a bit. Now, that being said, with the kids, man, we're just doing our darndest to make sure the kids still have to do stuff. They don't just, like, they still had to work and shovel snow and recycle cans. Now, granted, they're making about 40 to 1 on the dollar, you know, right, of like value, but like, they've still got to, you know, you've got to go out and shovel walkways, and you got to go out and do whatever we're telling you in the studio or in the office. And there's still tasks, there's still chores. And it's not, yes, anything you want, and, you know, that kind of stuff. And then just trying like crazy to just instill just good Christian principles in the kids, and trying to make them understand that this stuff comes from sweat. It comes from hard work. It comes from diligence, not just hard work. I think we can get lost in the idea of like, I'll just work harder. But at the same time, like, we've got to work smart, and we've got to be intelligent with our resources and with what God's granted us to grow that. And so we're just working like crazy to make sure the kids understand that. And I pray to God I'm not screwing them up too much. And I would look to your input on this too, and what your philosophy is.
Yeah, well, what you're speaking to is just like how to teach them to be good stewards, right?
Right.
And I think that might be what I'm asking too, because like, when I look back at when I was 16, so we had nothing. We grew up on welfare. We had nothing. I remember I got in an accident with my mom's car. It was this old beat up car, but the accident caused a claim on her insurance. And she's like, I can't afford the increase in my premiums if you don't pay off the bumper that you've messed up on this other person's vehicle. And so I had to work all summer moving furniture, basically 16 hours a day, six, seven days a week, to save enough to pay off this bumper for this person so that I could get my mom to be able to not be in destitution. And it was that, because I was kind of a lazy kid before that. Like, I was kind of I just did whatever it took to get by, like most 16-year-olds. I had a lot to learn. But like, it was that experience and that desperation that we had to go through as a family that I had to take full responsibility of that drove me into this hardworking attitude. Like you're talking about, like, you have to work hard. You have to, you know, be a good steward of what you've built. You have to save this money to be able to pay for this thing. It taught me this lesson. And so I look at my kids and I'm like, man, I can't fake that. Like, I can't force that on them, but I do need to bring that lesson forward. And I've seen good elements of this and bad. And like, my oldest is probably the easiest to do this with. My youngest is the hardest. but it's like, guys, I want to teach you about saving money. And I want to teach you about having a goal for something, right? So my 11-year-old is saving for a car right now, which is really cool. And she's the best example. Like, if I give you my 7-year-old's example, it's not like, we're working hard. There's lots
that
of
must be like a birth order dynamic, because my...
For sure.
My oldest just doesn't care. She's got money. We always have like... Save, spend, give. Every birthday money or money you've earned, save, spend, give. We're going to never spend more. We're never going to be, you know, if we get $100, we're never not going to have 70 of it. Yeah. Right. Just anything to beat this into these kids and burn it into them. Right. 100%. And unfortunately, and let me walk back one thing real quick too with my upbringing. My parents were awesome. And my dad tried to like lead me down the road of good financial stewardship. And I was just too smart to listen to him. I listened to my dad with construction and everything, like learn like a sponge from him. Finances, didn't want to hear it. What do you know, old man? Well, son, you spend a lot of money out at the bars and restaurants every night. Oh, dad, it's $20. Yeah, every night for 3 years. Yeah, that'll get you. And it did. And so I do want to give credit. Like, my parents were awesome and like tried to instill good stuff in me, and I didn't want to hear it in some places. So that being said, but we do push on that with the kids as a big tenet of that. So I interrupted you. I apologize. Please finish your thought, because I want to hear it.
No, it's exactly what you're saying. It's like, so she's saving for a car, which is cool. It's far away, but she needs interim rewards. And so she's in middle school and she's like, hey, I want to get a phone. And I have this old phone. I have the old iPhone mini. I've kept it for many years. She loves it. It's small. It can fit her hands. And she's like, I can have the phone. And I was like, I don't know. I don't really want her to have a phone, but I'm like,
yeah, it's a tough one.
I know.
We're struggling with that too. Help me.
Oh God, I don't have good advice for that one. But what was interesting was I said to her, look, she was at like $800 saved. I was like, if you can save $1,000, I will give you this phone. But here's the deal. You have to pay for half your cell phone bill moving forward. So not only do you have to save $200 more, you have to figure out how to make money on a monthly basis to keep up with your bills and keep up with your savings. And I just saw a light turn on in her. And she went from kind of doing chores once in a while to like trying to figure out, dad, like, can I do lawn care for the neighbors? Like, how do we do this? And it was like having a goal. It took a lot of years to teach her just the value of money, but then giving her a goal that she could go and achieve suddenly lit her up. Now, we just talked about this. That is not true for my youngest. She doesn't care about goals. She just wants to have a good time. So it depends on the kid, I think. And you even said it, like, you didn't fully listen to your parents. I don't think we have full control to teach our kids everything that we want. We can hope. But anyway, I ask that question all the time because I'm always curious to hear what people say. And that, for me anyways, is what I figured out. And beyond that, I'm just like, love my kids unconditionally and make sure like I'm still clear with boundaries. And I've got like a... not stern, but like a, it's like, I will hold the line, but I love you. Right. And it's like, if we have conversations, I'm not yelling at them, but I'm stern and clear when they need to make, you know, corrections on what they've done. And I always end it with like, and I love you. Let's have a hug. Right. Anyway, that's Danny Kerr's life lessons.
That's solid stuff. And yeah, the birth order thing. Yeah, my youngest, like my middle, gonna be really good with money. He's very, I hate to say stingy, but like he is watching his scruples. My youngest, oh Lord, he's awesome kid. He can run the skid steers around here, loves to operate machines, wants to weld all the time. But like I can tell like financially he's gonna be like, and again, it must be a birth order. I don't know. It must be a birth order thing maybe, but like, he's all about goals and stuff, but like also wants to spend every dime he's got on like a new helmet or a Pokemon or something. It's like, no.
Exactly.
He's going down the road I went, like, oh Lord, no.
The minute my youngest has like $20, she's like, can we go to the store? I want to go to the store.
Oh gosh. God. Yeah. That's my Levi. I love you, anyway, Levi.
Good. Caleb, this was great. Thank you. We covered all kinds of things in your life.
Bared my soul to the world a bit, but it's okay. If it helps someone, then it's worth it. And if it doesn't, whatever, so be it. It helps me stay humble.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you being open and real. And I think it does, you'll speak to volumes to a lot of what all of us go through as entrepreneurs. And I think it's important actually that you're not only doing this, but you give a lot of us all permission to do the same, right? I think people don't always speak about this stuff. So thank you for doing that. That means a lot.
Yeah, it's like, dude, you're not alone. And it's also too, for me, I think it's really important through like our Instagram and like, we have a beautiful facility. We have awesome equipment, beautiful trucks. Like, it looks awesome. And I could paint a rosy picture of like how awesome we are and like how we don't screw up. Dude, I get people that ask us, reach out, like, hey, my wife, and or like, I'm thinking about quitting my $150,000 a year line, you know, electric lineman job to start a lawn care business. And I'm like, he's like, I really like what you've built and you're done. Like, dude, pump the brake. Whoa, hold on. Or like people are like, hey, you know, I want my wife to join the company. She's going to quit her teaching career to join. Whoa. Like so the reason I try to share like all of the hard stuff is because we get asked questions like that. And I would, this is what I would have a hard time sleeping at night with. If like we painted a picture of this, that it was easy. Right. And then like someone follows our lead and like, well, the almonds, you know, did it or whatever. To say you don't have influence like that would be ignorant, right? Like it is out there. I know that. And then again, with all humility, I say that at the same time. Like, but that's why I really do want to share. I would have a hard time sleeping if I knew someone quit a six-figure job to start an easy entrepreneurship journey to, you know, make your own hours and charge anything you want. And like, you know, like I would be wrecked if I knew someone like, well, Amon made it look easy. I'm like, oh, well, that was, I would have a hard time with that. So I want people to know, if that's what you feel called to do, you need to not go to your deathbed wondering what if. A relative of mine, last story quick here.
Sure.
Relative of mine chased a Hollywood dream career out west in Hollywood. And it had some small parts, this and that, didn't make it. And he told me one time that he felt like a failure. I'm like, dude, you did something so many people are going to go to their deathbed with regrets of wondering what if. Like, you at least went for it, tried it, had some awesome experiences, met some neat people. You're not going to die wondering. Like, so many people will die wondering. Like, and I got nothing but respect for that, man. I think that's just incredible. And I had the privilege, too, of starting two companies with no kids, you know, no money, no assets, nothing to lose. You know, when I started out of high school or in high school, I had nothing to lose. When I started my second company, I had nothing to lose again. And like, that's a privilege, right? I see guys like quit well-paying jobs to pursue a dream and a career of something they think is going to be better for their family. Dude, my hat's off to you. I don't know what that's like, but having kids now and we make a little bit of a pivot in the company that I'm scared to do. Dude, I'm like, I can't imagine starting a company from scratch again. So nothing but respect out there for the folks that are going after it, pursuing the American dream. I truly respect that, admire that, and think you should go for it if you think you should. Just do it in a smart way.
Yeah, and I think you said something really important, which is just like, remember that you're going to be fine. Because even in the worst case scenario, you're still going to be fine. I have this really funny saying, similar to what you just said. It's like, Danny Kerr, as long as you can eat, sleep, poop, and breathe, you're good. Now, take one of those away, we got problems. But those don't involve how much money you have, because we live in North America. We won the genetic lottery already. Our businesses, hopefully, for the most part, can feel a bit like a fun game we play. Now, it's not fun when you're going through bankruptcy. It's not fun when you get through, like, you know, your project manager leaving unannounced or the big things that happen along the way.
Yeah, a client's super mad at you for either your fault or not, or someone's trying to rip you off. Like, that stuff sucks, man.
Having cash flow that, totally. All the things.
Yeah, cash flow. We haven't talked about that. Trying to make payroll Friday, that kind of stuff. Like, good Lord. But
yeah. But I think at the end of it all, like I've looked at this so much even into myself, and I'm just like, I'm still fine. And I've been through all of those things. And somehow I'm not on the street doing heroin. You know what I mean? Like, that's the worst case scenario. And somehow I think we go there sometimes when we think about failure. It's like, it's all coming down. It's like, no, we're fine. It's just going to be a lot of work today. What's this? Meditation.
Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. It helps with that a lot of like really just realize like, I get this realization a lot. I'm getting heady here. So just like hit disconnect one if it's time to do that. But like, dude, I drive by a cemetery, right? And I see gravestones that are 100 years old. And you're like, he might have been the biggest buggy maker in the city. Where now? Right. Yeah. And that, like, that always reminds me of, like, dude, I sound like I have some out of control ego. Maybe I do, I guess. But like, that just reminds me of, like, careful what you're working so hard towards, because you will be you will be dead. The memento mori. Don't forget you're going to die. And it's like, make sure all the sacrifice is worth it in the right ways, and not ignoring your family and ignoring your children and your God. Like, all this hard work's got to be smartly done, intelligently done. Anyways.
Yeah. I think I saw this online, but it really resonates with me. What you just said is, like, you remember your grandpa, right? Caleb, you know your grandpa?
Oh yeah.
Do you know your grandpa's grandpa, or remember who he is?
Yes.
Do you know your grandpa's grandpa's grandpa?
Unfortunately, no.
Oh, you do?
I know where you're going with this. And that's just a couple sides of the family. There's other sides of the family I don't know anything about, right? Okay. And like, yeah, I know exactly.
Don't. Like, I know my grandpa. I know the name of my grandpa's grandpa, and that's about it. And that's where it fades. And I'm like, and I'm family, right? And it's just kind of like, huh. So if that's the case, and I'm working so hard for all of this, I better make sure that I enjoy it, right? Because two or three generations from now, I'm maybe a name. If nothing else,
maybe.
So, yeah.
Okay. It's wild, man.
Anything else we should go over? Anyone?
I think I ad-lib plenty at the end there. Otherwise, cool. I love talking about this stuff because it motivates me, right? It gets me fired up to when I step out of the studio here to hopefully be on the right path. Like, again, full disclosure, Brittany and I have been squabbling for 12 hours now. And I hope I walk out of the studio. She's here now. And I hope I walk out of here with not the attitude I had this morning or last night, right? Like, it reminds me of things to sharpen up on, because Lord knows I need it.
Dude, me and you, and probably a lot of people listening, we're all in the same spot. So we're all just crazy humans trying to figure it out in life. And I thank you for being so open about it. So I'll let you get back to your day.
Likewise.
Yeah. Thanks for doing what you do, Caleb. Thanks for serving the industry. People know, I think, where to find you, but you run the Kid Contractor podcast. You've got a whole bunch going on. If you want to reach out, Caleb, any specific way for people to find you?
All social platforms at Almond Landscape LLC, Instagram, YouTube, all that stuff. You'll find us. And for heaven's sake, if you're not on board with Breakthrough, like, and you're not a peer group or something, folks, jump in, because it will make a huge impact in your life, in your career, in your company, in the short term and for the long term, definitely, obviously.
Awesome, man. Okay, thanks for coming on.
Dude, my pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.